Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Initiated in January of 2009, this joint investigation, which we've dubbed Operation Bloodette, traced a sophisticated PCB, cocaine, and marijuana distribution ring that sold significant quantities of drugs to gang members and their associates.
New Jersey Attorney General Ann Milgram there, who we'll talk to now. It wasn't bad enough that New Jersey had those 44 corruption and money laundering busts last week. This week, as you heard, they busted another 43 people, allegedly from a drug ring led by two female members of the Bloods gang, and so police called it Operation Bloodette. But that's not all Attorney General Milgram did that was interesting this week. She's suing Merrill Lynch for defrauding New Jersey and settled for a big fine with one of those credit repair companies that she also accused of fraud. Let's talk about all of those things now with New Jersey Attorney General Ann Milgram. Attorney General, thanks so much for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Oh, that wasn't you in the clip, after
that
all, was it?
That was Prosecutor Paula Dow, the Essex County prosecutor.
Sorry about that. So let's start with this credit repair firm first, because I think that really affects a lot of people, and a lot of my listeners are getting approached by companies like this.
Yes.
And too many are probably getting ripped off. Who settled with you for what?
United Credit Adjusters settled with us for $600,000 and a promise of restitution to a number of the consumers. This is critically important, though, because as we see a very difficult economy and a lot of folks facing foreclosure on their homes or other credit problems, we've just seen a proliferation of these credit, so-called credit adjustment companies that are out there basically scamming people for thousands of dollars, making promises about how they can, you know, basically repair people's credit overnight, which is impossible, and luring folks to pay them money, and in exchange they get nothing in return.
So what happened in this particular case?
So in this particular case, there were a series of different individuals that were basically made promises, for example, that their credit could be fixed overnight, that all the prior debts and problems that they had would be absolutely wiped out. Of course, you know, that's not the way that it works. And they're making promises that are just false and can't ever be kept by anyone, legitimate company or not. And in exchange, they were getting thousands of dollars. So it was actually making many of the consumer situations worse, because people were not only paying United Credit Adjusters, they were also stopping payment on credit cards, and there were other series of things that were happening that were putting them in worse financial situations. And so United Credit Adjusters has acknowledged responsibility. They've agreed to pay a $600,000 fine and then again do restitution. They've also, most significantly to me, agreed to stop doing business in the state of New Jersey. Again, that's critically important that we not have people out there defrauding consumers.
So they can do business elsewhere? Because it sounds like their operation was essentially fraudulent. I don't know if you think that's an overstatement, because I don't want to defame them if that's not accurate. But if that was their business model, then why should they be allowed to do business in the future anywhere?
Well, there's an ongoing national case with FTC. So what we did is we sued first in New Jersey, because they have offices in Howell and in a couple of other locations in New Jersey, and we were seeing a lot of New Jersey victims. So we went into court as quickly as we could. The FTC has also sued, and obviously, you know, I can't speak to how that case will be resolved,
right.
But I know this is a national issue. I mean, this is something we're seeing. We've seen in a number of different circumstances. We're doing a number of different enforcement efforts on it right now, and, you know, we're as active as we can be in shutting down the company and the offices that are in our state.
How can consumers tell a legitimate credit counselor from a scam?
Well, there are a couple of things. First of all of the states, state agencies, the Attorney General's office, we all put up information on what to look for legitimate companies. You know, oftentimes you see the fraudulent companies ask for money up front instead of they basically ask for huge payments up front. Oftentimes they make promises. If someone went on our consumer affairs website, njconsumeraffairs.gov, they would see a list of things that basically tell folks that they can't promise that they're going to basically erase all your credit difficulties overnight. Credit repair can occur over time. It's generally a lengthy process, and it's not something, there's no magic wand here where someone can all of a sudden resolve all the credit difficulties that you've had. So, you know, there's a primer on the website that talks people through what to look for.
New Jersey Attorney General Ann Milgram, my guest on WNYC. Let's go on to Merrill Lynch. Why are you suing them?
We are suing Merrill Lynch because the state invested about $300 million starting in January 2008 and then converted that investment, was originally preferred stock, into common stock in July of 2008. And obviously, towards the end of 2008, Merrill Lynch lost billions of dollars in their fourth quarter earnings. What we have alleged is that they did not tell us the truth up front when we invested in January 2008. There were misrepresentations about the financial health of the company, and that they were also not forthright with us, as is required under the law, in July when we converted from preferred stock to common stock. Furthermore, they had promised that everyone who was converting in July of 2008 would be given the same terms, and that turns out also not to be true. So it's basically a case based on misrepresentations, false statements about the financial health of the company, and essentially unfair dealing.
If Merrill Lynch was lying to the state of New Jersey for its potential investments, was it lying to every American who had an account with them?
My sense is that when there are investments that are made on the state level, I can speak to, when we make investments, our division of investments makes investments, we ask for information about the financial health of a company. Under law, they're required to be honest. My sense is that if they were not being honest, whoever they made these representations to, our sense is that those representations were not accurate or honest.
But is this an isolated incident or a system of systematic unfairness and fraud in the way stocks are priced for different customers?
I think that the real question is whether these companies have gotten away with not being honest, right? So mm-hmm. The concern I have is that there are a number of companies in our division of investments, they regulate our pension investments for the state, which is billions of dollars. They regularly have these conversations with the investment banks and companies where they ask them, what's the health of the company, which is a very appropriate question to ask when you're looking to make huge investments, when you're talking about $300 million. When they don't get accurate information, they can't make the right decisions for the people who are in, for example, the pension program in the state of New Jersey. So when the companies are misleading us, we don't have all the information, we can't make the right decisions on behalf of the state. And so I think it's incredibly problematic. I don't think it's an isolated incident. I think you've seen that we've brought suits against other companies with similar concerns. But I do think that this is an industry-wide question about why folks are not following the law about honest representations about the health of their business.
And listeners, if you have a question for New Jersey Attorney General Ann Milgram, you can post it to our webpage right now. We'll pass it along but it's WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. We're collecting these on the web to save time. WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Did you hear about those high-frequency trading programs that Goldman Sachs and I guess some others use that are so fast on the computer that Goldman can actually use them as if they were getting an insider trading tip and even potentially to manipulate prices?
I did. I read an article about it recently.
Because in New York, we've seen the Attorney General's office there go after Wall Street fraud and excessive bonuses under Elliot Spitzer and now Andrew Cuomo. Does the New Jersey Attorney General have a similar role to play as kind of beat cop on the finance industry?
We're slightly different in that we obviously, New York has the financial industry there, but we do play a role when anything impacts the state. And so when it comes down to impacting consumers or in this case, our division of investments, which regulates our state pension, absolutely yes.
So it's different than New York because the companies are actually located in New York.
Well, I think what you've seen in New York is a historical focus because, again, it is such a they're located in the city and it's such an important part of the of New York. But obviously, we do have a lot of companies that are located in New Jersey, and so we have played a role and will continue to play a role wherever we have the ability to try to. Here we have a case where we think New Jersey lost millions of dollars. You'll always see us out there trying to vindicate the rights of the people of the state.
Tell us about the Bloodettes. 43 arrests. Is this a mostly female drug ring?
There were eight of the 43 arrests were women. Of the arrests, about 30 were for narcotics, and the other 12 or 13 are for weapons possession. It is a very significant drug ring, as you heard before. PCP, also known as wet on the streets, cocaine, crack cocaine, and marijuana, doing about $2.6 million of business every single year. And it was run by these two women. One of the women is what's known as an OG, or original gangster, which is a very, very high rank in status in the gang. So it is an unusual case in that we rarely see women at this rank of the Bloods. And, what concerns us is obviously, gangs are expanding in membership. And as they reach into the suburbs, they're also sort of expanding to exert the same type of destructive control over the lives of young women that we've traditionally seen them exerting over the lives of young men, enlisting them in deadly violence.
You mentioned some of the drugs that they were allegedly selling. Do you see the drug scene changing in New Jersey recently? The New York Times today has a story about the return of deadly heroin addiction and a spike in heroin deaths on Long Island.
We've seen cocaine and heroin traditionally in the state for quite a period of time. We don't often see PCP, so this was slightly unusual. We did see meth recently in one case, which again is not common, but we mostly see cocaine, crack, marijuana, and heroin.
Anything else that you think was different about this because it was run by women, either how they conducted business or who their customers were or other kinds of victims or anything like that?
You know what's fascinating about it is that these women were involved in all the types of things that we see high-level gang members tend to be involved in: large-scale narcotics distribution, violence, weapons possession. You know, we took 138 bullets, off of the folks that we arrested. That's incredible. I mean, that's 138 lives, hopefully, that we've saved, because those bullets can't be used to shoot or kill someone. But this was a very high-level, sophisticated gang that was operating, you know, in East Orange, in Orange, in Montclair, in Newark, in Union. So they had spread out. They were actually dealing with two different sets of the Bloods, the 464 Piru, which is what the two women were, as well as sex, money, murder, which is another subset. So, in many ways, what's most shocking is that it's a lot like the other gangs that were cracking down on in the state.
Could they have gotten away with it for longer because, as women, they were outside the profile?
I think the answer here is no, because they were engaged in such a high quantity of drug sales as well as violence. There's no question, we're, as part of the governor's anti-crime plan, these folks were part of our target list. And so we know that we targeted this specific gang based on the violence that they were committing and the locations where they were selling are high violence locations and operating. And so we knew up front what we were dealing with.
And since the feds busted 44 people last week, you had to come back and bust 43, so you could almost match them, right?
Well, this has been in the works since January, so, we all sort of, it's a great coincidence. We've got a lot of numbers this past 2 weeks.
New Jersey Attorney General Ann Milgram, my guest on WNYC. And on the corruption busts of the politicians last week, in the past, your office and the U.S. Attorney have done anti-political corruption collaborations. This time, I guess it was just the feds. Why weren't you included?
Well, we do both. So we work together on Sharp James. We work together on many cases. You should look for us to work together in the future again. But we also do a lot of cases separately. So we've both done a lot of cases separately in the past year, as well as cases together. This is a case that they had started. You've heard the reports about 10 years ago. Came out of a case they took down 2 years ago that was solely their case. And they obviously, I think, did a tremendous job of building it into the case that we saw last week.
As the state's top law enforcement officer, maybe you could clear something up that I think the public may not understand. We're hearing about the resignation today after this indictment of the mayor of Hoboken, Camarena. But elected officials don't have to step down just because they are charged or indicted. Is that correct?
There are a variety of different provisions that really come into play. The forfeiture of office, being forced out of office after a criminal conviction, does not, as you say, it doesn't get implicated until somebody's actually convicted of a federal or state crime. The governor actually has additional powers under what's known as the Faulkner Act. Hoboken, for example, is a Faulkner Act city, which would give the governor some latitude over the mayor in the running of that city that he might not have in other locations. But I think the governor did call for the resignation of Camarena. A number of folks had called for these folks to step aside, and obviously there were pretty widespread public protests.
On another matter, Governor Corzine's office has confirmed with WNYC that the governor's office was served with federal subpoenas for documents from the McGreevy and Cody administrations related to the NCAP project, that failed redevelopment project in the Meadowlands. So, in essence, the governor's office is responding to these as the official custodian of the executive branch's records, I guess. Would it be a mistake to assume that the current administration might be a target?
I can't discuss investigations, particularly, as you know, we're very sensitive to that. the subpoenas do not touch at all on the Corzine administration. They're solely limited to the prior administrations. The conduct ends, I believe, it's the end of 2005 or the beginning of January 2006, and there's no indication from the subpoenas that anything touches on the governor's administration.
And as the Attorney General, do you play a role in seeing to it that the administration complies with federal subpoenas, or is that entirely a job for the governor's council?
Well, here's what I would say. I mean, there are a couple of things. One is we represent all of the state departments and the governor. So in the civil capacity, we obviously play a role in making sure that there's full compliance with any subpoena. And obviously, you know, my job is unique in that I wear both a criminal and a civil hat. So I'm also, you know, as you mentioned, the chief law enforcement officer. So we do conduct investigations as well. So we do both.
New Jersey Attorney General Ann Milgram, thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC. Coming up next, a segment in our Halted Development series. Somebody called in the other day and said they moved into a partially vacant new condo high-rise, only to discover that the building did not have a certificate of occupancy. And apparently that caller was not the only person this is happening to. So we will ask, what does this certificate of occupancy really mean, and who should be watching out for it? Stay with us.